We're going to take about 5 to 7 minutes, not to be too precise, for questions, so we don't lose our time. But I think there's a question from Alan up at the top.
Thanks. Very interesting paper, but one that I felt a growing sense of frustration with, and I think I have to preface my remark. I don't know if this is a question, by the way, or an observation or a series of observations. That will probably become clear as I go through it. It's a sense of growing frustration over the last day and a half, so please don't take this too personally. But the issue of participation and the focus on the audience, I thought, okay, great, that's going to be interesting. I think that maybe the audience has been left in the cold a little bit, perhaps, in some of what I've heard so far. You spoke of fragmented identities. I think I would ask the question whether identities have ever been anything other than fragmented. I think that's another discussion. But you made some reference to how perhaps that theorizing might affect the real political world that we live in. But you didn't offer any actual tangible evidence of what you mean by that. I mean, I, for one, I'm quite happy to live in a social democracy if living in a social democracy means that consensus is agreeing to disagree. Sunil Gupta yesterday noted the problems of not living in a social democracy. So I'm quite comfortable with that. The title of the conference, Beyond Modernism, that made me think of maybe postmodernism, made me think of cultural studies. Certainly cultural studies, a field of study that takes the audience very seriously. Perhaps takes the audience too seriously, and the audience becomes over-determining, to use some rather old Althusserian language. Forgive me. But I find in your paper that the focus on the audience is one in which the audience is almost thoroughly aestheticized. Mm-hmm. I would say there's almost a condescension towards the audience. That's something I have enormous problems with. And so maybe the title of the conference should be Art Museums Beyond Aesthetics, because so much of what I'm hearing is rooted in an aestheticism which may not be an 18th century aestheticism, but is certainly a 20th or 21st century aestheticism. And I think that if popular culture, it seems to me, in your last example, the ER example, popular culture serves only as a disrupting force. In an attempt at a modernist disinterested attention to a great modernist genius. And I think I understand your point. But it seems it also fails to take popular culture seriously, in the sense that I, for one, would argue that ER is much more culturally significant than Jackson Pollock.
I would too.
Yeah, and so therefore it's, but that I think comes from a real interest in the audience. And I really would like to hear you say more on the audience, because your notion of participation, and this comes back to your notion of your problem with pronouns, you know, the we's and the us's, I don't feel part of the we that you're talking about. So I'd really like to hear a bit more about audiences
you've
and
never,
about we.
You've never been distracted in an exhibition?
Sorry?
You've never been distracted in an exhibition?
Oh, I've got lots of anecdotes I could tell you about being distracted. Yeah.
Then you belong. I can't really answer your question. Just a couple of points. One is, I'm not sure I understand about the aestheticization or why you perceive of what I'm reading as aestheticization. There is no the audience, it's us. The audience I'm talking about is always where I am at the moment in which I am, and other people and that I, you know, go to or engage in conversation with. So I don't perceive of this as a kind of mode of condescension. I think that, and that's the point, in the kind of social theory around audiences, it's always a them, and they're always kind of demographically in some way plotted out. Whereas I really am thinking about this kind of momentary performative space of Arendt, that, you know, a group of people thrown together in a particular set of circumstances under a particular set of demands, it's a little bit like Foucault's definition of discourse, becomes, you know, a performative audience. And the question is the kind of strategies of reading that we have at our disposal. And that the same is true for our endlessly fragmented identities. Of course, we've always had endlessly fragmented identities. We didn't have the reading strategies to articulate the stratas, and we're still, you know, the very early stages of that articulation. We can only articulate it in the crudest terms right now. So, and as for solutions, I think that's a kind of set of premature demands. I mean, I think that, you know, what I'm capable of at this moment is kind of looking around me and trying to see if something like ER can bring into relief and make us more conscious of the fact that we're inhabiting a mythical structure around somebody called Jackson Pollock, that we're functioning, you know, in a position of fandom, and so on and so on. And I think to do that, to have learned from popular culture the degree to which we're in sort of states of identification and so on, from my perspective, is to take this popular culture very seriously, to understand how much we have to learn from it. I'm slightly weary of, you know, all of the rehearsals of people's kind of actual personal, you know, identifications with popular culture. For me, it's more of a kind of cultural studies mode in which it becomes a model, you know, from which I can learn things that are not visible to me otherwise.
Lynn. And then Vera, and then we're going to cut. Lynn.
Hi, I'm Lynn Tether. I teach museum studies at the University of Toronto. Alan's a colleague at the University of Toronto. We're speaking at this moment, I guess. I wanted to come back to the question of audience, but first to acknowledge something that I found remarkable because it's resonating so much with a personal journey this past year. And that is from your movement from criticism to critique to criticality. I've benefited very much lately in discovering a group of people called critical pedagogists, one of whom sitting beside me, who would really hate to have the title put upon him. But people like Roger Simon, who have understood that for 15 years they worked in a critical pedagogy mode, which took them, at the end of the day, through a wonderful assortment of tools and ways of critiquing educational forms and oppression and blending it all together. But what would we do when we got up tomorrow morning? So the second...
Sorry, what was the lesson?
But what do I feel empowered to do when I wake up tomorrow morning? The second part of which he moves into transformative pedagogy. And I've felt that I now feel very comfortable in stealing this and applying it to museology, by which I mean, by the way, all museums. The first thing I'd like to say is that we have by now, as you so rightly plotted out, such a remarkable body of critique, critical museology I sometimes use as a way of summarizing that. And I don't want to reduce that in any way, but when you're trying to deal with training, educating people, talking about the meaning of museums and entering the profession or entering all the places between the profession and the seams outside the institutions, all the places that some of us work, in fact, where are the positives? I feel as though the last day and a half has been a repetition of a journey or a problem which is somehow between hope and despair. And so in the transformative place, there is some hope. And I heard it, I think, in the criticality that you were describing. And it was very positive, and I appreciate it very much. And with it, I think, in museology terms, goes something we are not doing, which is the recovery of a progressive museology tradition that existed within modernism. It was a tiny river, but there were people who were actually trying to resist the hegemonic museum ideas. And there are many of us now. I'm not sure we're going to succeed, but there's wonderful examples all across Canada, in North America, around the world, of people who, maybe for a moment, maybe for a whole place they hold within an organization, are trying to enact reforming museology activity. The second point about audience.
Many I'm not sure you're going to get a second
okay.
point. Because I'm very conscious of the fact that we are, we started a little bit late this afternoon. We've got a very full day. Vera, did you just... Okay, if it's frivolous, you can't have it.
We can't not have frivolity.
Do you want, okay, frivolity goes.
I have to be very careful to define this as an anthropological question, not an aestheticizing question. What did you wear to that exhibition?
Okay, on that rhetorical note, I would like to make a very functional and practical announcement, and that is, some of you didn't get lunch because there was a little screw-up with the caterer. So, for those of you who didn't, this is a lunch break. For those of you who did get lunch, this is just fresh air, and we're coming back precisely. The speakers will be at the table, and we will begin at 2:30 on the dot. So speakers come back, and we're ready to go. Thank you, Arif.